It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another Wealth Architect Podcast. So glad you're here. We have a great guest today, and I have a feeling we're going to be doing some great conversations about psychology, philosophy, investing, some of the nitty-gritty of what we're going to be, of what we like to study here, right? Since 2010, our guest has been teaching individuals, families, and small business owners all over the world how to align their spending, saving, and earning with their values. And she's a certified psychology-informed money coach and financial behavior specialist with an extensive background in education, mindfulness, and personal development. Right up my alley. She's been featured in the U.S. News, Forbes, New York Post, Market Watch, and Oprah magazines, and many other media outlets. Check out her Personal Finance 101 online course and much more at sfmoneycoach.com. We'll mention that in the later on in the podcast and then in the show notes. But please, let's welcome Carrie Friedberg. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Mark. How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
I'm awesome. I am awesome. So glad to have you. And I would love to hear a little bit about what you do and more about how you got into that, what the backstory is, and your history of how getting into what you do, changes the world. So go.
Oh, sure. I coach individuals and couples and sometimes multi-generational families around cash flow and personal finance. So I understand your business is more on the investing level and that kind of long-term wealth conversation. Mine is really in the day-to-day, daily money management. How do you have enough in your checking account to pay bills on time in full, while feeling free, happy, and confident around money? So that's really the work that I do with people. I got into it because I was struggling with money. So it was kind of an accidental career. I was a client myself at first. I was about 30 years old at the time, and I had never learned how to budget or build cash savings, like the basics. And I was overly emotional about money, crying all the time. I had this pit of anxiety in my belly. I just was unhappy and stressed about money. And I had so many questions and I really didn't know who to talk to. And at the same time, I was doing a lot of yoga and I had experienced a lot of physical, emotional, spiritual transformation on the yoga mat. And I thought, there's got to be a better way. There has got to be a different approach or support or teachers. I want to feel better about money. And so it was really a decision I made when I was living in San Francisco, and I set out on a path to educate and empower myself, and the rest is history.
So you basically had some pain that caused you to get educated in this department, and you got so educated that now you help other people, right?
Yes. So I worked myself with a coach one-on-one for 2 years, and it doesn't have to take that long for people, but that was my journey. And then I did a year-long intensive coaching training program after that to become certified, and then launched my private practice as the SF Money Coach.
So I want to go back even further than that. And I want to ask you, like, how did you get into that situation where you're crying over money? That's what you said. You're
Yes.
crying over money. You have anxiety. You're probably losing sleep. Your probably health was suffering. How do you / people get into that position?
Well, I was living in an expensive city, even though it was the early 2000s at the time, San Francisco. So I had moved there from Michigan with this kind of dream of California, you know, good food. I could play tennis outdoors all year round. I liked the liberal politics, et cetera. And I made that happen. I got a job as a teacher. So my starting salary, my first job in San Francisco, paid me $18,000.
Wow. It's
not a joke.
What year was this?
That was specifically 1998.
1998, you're making $18,000. Even, I mean, that sounds like nothing today, but even back then, that's not a lot. Go ahead. Yeah.
It wasn't a lot. I was an intern teacher. So it was sort of an assistant job. But anyway, okay. I took on second, third, and fourth side hustles to make that work, all sure. In the realm of education and working with young people. But I had a desire. I had so many dreams and visions. I had friends with more money than I had. They wanted to go skiing in Tahoe and go out for nice group dinners and live the life of 20 somethings in the city. And so that led to credit card debt. I also had this expensive moving habit. I kept thinking, oh, if I move to the Mission, I'll be happier. Or if I move to the Richmond and Pacific Heights, that was not a good plan. Moving every couple of years, very expensive to do that. Anyway, always renting, and the math did not add up. So I was always worried about checks posting and it, when is my direct deposit going to hit? And there was, it felt like never enough. Especially given how big my desire and hopes and dreams were. And so that was the conflict. That was the conundrum. And I just couldn't get over it and solve it myself. People were saying things like, just write a budget and stick to it. And literally, when people would say things like that, my hearing would go out. I mean, I had very strong, very strong reactions. I did not know what they meant.
Well, there's a saying, wherever you go in life, you take you with you. And so moving
Yes.
is not going to solve your problems. You're still going to have the same issues. So until we
Right.
get to uncover some of those root problems, and I want to talk about that, then we're not going to really solve the problem. We're just going to put a Band-Aid over it. We'll still have the bleeding underneath, and we'll just change the Band-Aid. So
Exactly.
how do you think we get, because you're not the only one, and look, I've been doing this for a long time, and how do you get to that position where you don't know how to do a budget? You want to put your head in the sand. That's probably the easiest thing to do. We all handle money differently because money is energy, right? So money is stored value, it's stored energy. How do we get to that position where we have to hit rock bottom? Why and why? Why do we get in that position?
I think it's lack of education. I think there's a problem in America that personal finance isn't taught at every grade level and every age. I did work as a teenager, so I had some cash, which I spent on CDs and gas for my very used car that and things like that. I was from a big family that was affluent in the area, suburb of Detroit. So it didn't make sense, but no one kind of sat down with me to give me that coaching around steps 1, 2, and 3, A, B, C. This is how you need to set things up. Here's how you map it out. And importantly, here's how you stay connected to your spending plan so that you can make adjustments while there's still time. So there's nuance there because no 2 months are alike, right? Now it's a holiday, now it's summer break. And those were things that were difficult for me to manage at the time, especially those periodic, non-monthly, bigger ticket items. And so, it didn't make sense how I ended up there. I just did. I just found myself in the struggle, on the struggle bus, and feeling very powerless and hopeless. And because of what I had experienced on the yoga mat, and by then, by the way, I had a graduate degree. Like I went to private school, K through 12. I had an undergrad degree and a graduate degree, and I still felt this way. So I knew education was smart. Right. That was the value I had, and that my family instilled on me that you can learn things. This is figure outable. So that's the decision I made around money. And I started reading books and series of books and watching webinars. And I hired someone off of Craigslist to teach me Quicken. I tried to design my own tracking software. All of these things were helpful and got the momentum going. I did traditional financial therapy for 6 months, very cathartic, shed a lot of tears, but I still didn't have a budget at the end of the day. And it was this match with a money coach who helped me with the emotional and psychological side of things, as well as the practical. She said, you don't need three checking accounts, Carrie. You need one. And things like that, that I just had tried to solve various cash flow challenges on my own, and I had created more chaos in the meantime.
Well, I mean, I laud you and give you a lot of credit for being out there with your story. Certainly, we all need to transform in our money department. And I want to pontificate for a second, and I have a feeling you're going to agree. But it goes back not just to the fact that we don't educate people about money, not just in the United States, but around the world. But we really don't, we don't even start with the right programming. And so we are programmed as little tiny sparrows with our mouths open by our parents, the environment, our friends, the school system, and we don't really know. So your programming might be in one way and my programming might be a different one. And, you know, in fact, probably everybody on this podcast, listening to this podcast or watching, has got different programming, right? Money doesn't grow on trees. Well, that's one set of programming that takes us in one direction. Or, you know, the world is abundant. It's not a pie. That's another direction, right? So how do we settle on not just the education part of it, but the values part of it that we were never really taught because our parents did the best they could, but they weren't taught?
Exactly. So what I've learned in my study of financial psychology is that around the age of seven, most people have created a belief around money that they carry for the rest of their lives. Now, like you said, your environment, the family, the modeling you saw, siblings, other people, all of those things help to shape that decision about the world. And then, you know, when I was a teenager, I was sort of acting out around money and experimented with a little shoplifting, which I need to say that I did clean up in my older years and literally paid back and things like that. Yes, I did. Very, very comprehensively, because I couldn't get over it. And I had all this guilt and self-resentment and negative feelings. And that turmoil also caused the credit card debt and the moving habit and things like that in my 20s. And so then I think once you have skin in the game, when you're self-supporting or largely self-supporting, and you're trying to navigate your adult life and experience the lifestyle that you want. And I'm not talking celebrity rock star style lifestyle, but I also, it didn't make sense for me to live absolutely bare bones either. And so I was really trying to find that balance and middle path. But what happened for me in my 20s is I had to undo some of that programming and some of that modeling. For me, my mom didn't work. So she was a homemaker and a consummate volunteer, the busiest unemployed woman on earth, my dad used to call her. And she was very busy raising four kids and doing all of these things. And so I think part of me had a streak of entitlement and wanting to be taken care of and giving money the power outside of me, more of an orientation, like an external locus of control, that something else was going to take care of me. And whether it was a man or a boss or my dad, and, you know, not good, not healthy. And so for me, I really had to learn how to stand on my own two feet and grow up and be an adult and take responsibility and clean up the past, learn healthy habits, be consistent with them. I needed support with that. Like I said, it was like hardcore training with a coach for a couple of years, but I got it. Like, I had that breakthrough. And the thing is, Mark, that everything changed once I processed and integrated everything that I had let go of and that I was inviting in, and my relationships got better. I was able to move and stay in a nicer apartment and trade in a car I was embarrassed by. And the way I showed up at work and in my family and in romantic relationships and with roommates, all of that was more solid, positive, happy. I was able to participate in those conversations without breaking down. And so that sort of exemplifies the real transformation, is I actually became someone who felt happy and confident around money.
I love it. I mean, that's the kind of transformation that we need in the world. And I know we've been focused a little bit on left brain stuff, and I want to get back to left brain, but I also want to depart and I want to talk a little right brain or Eastern or whatever. I know you mentioned yoga a couple times, and why don't you tell us a little bit about Vipassana, because that's something we never talk about on the Wealth Architect podcast. And I have a
Okay.
feeling that it was it's a big or was a big part of your transformation. Talk to us about what that is and how it helped you transform in this department.
Absolutely. So there's a school of meditation called Vipassana that was created by an Indian guru who's now passed away. His name was Goenka, and his whole style of meditation was silent meditation. So you may have seen there's walking meditation or stare at a candle meditation or breathe with the ocean. This was sit in your own skin, embody your human self and burn through whatever comes up. Because let me tell you, I jumped off the deep end, and a lot of people in my yoga community were into this style of meditation. I jumped into a 10-day silent retreat, and on the near the North Fork of the American River here
Good
in
Lord.
California. I know.
Ten. I was invited to go to one of these and I was like, no, I'm good, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, aside from giving birth, which I've done twice, it is by far the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It was shockingly difficult. Of course, we surrendered our cell phones. There was no reading material allowed, no books. We were meditating for about 13 hours a day. It was like
Wow.
a 4 a.m. wake up, where you would just kind of wander in the dark to the meditation hall. You had your cushion, and there was some teaching from Goenka that they played, some guidance and things like that. You were able to speak for 5 minutes to one of the on-site instructors about once every 3 days.
Jeez.
There I was brushing my teeth at night, reading my toothpaste bottle, going, there's input there, literally like scanning it and reading the ingredients. It's just kind of a funny image. Making up stories in my head about what other people thought of me and felt about me. I mean, I was really in tune with my mind. I also, when you came out of it at the end, it was kind of social shock, like hearing your own voice again. Talking to these people you've had this 10-day experience with, your roommates and other people at the dining hall, and it was pretty earth-shattering. I also had an experience when I was on that retreat where, now this is going to be very woo-woo, but I'll just claim, living in California for the last 25 years, and I write the whole story in my book, but where I literally teleported. It's also called astral projection of sorts,
Yes.
where I had a dream, an image, because you hardly slept at night. It was more like Shavasana, like that final resting pose in a yoga class. You just kind of rested for a few hours. You never really entered deep sleep because you were living in that kind of awake deep sleep state. Anyway, I had a dream or a vision or whatever you want to call it. I still really don't know what happened about my friend visiting another friend and all these details of their experience in LA. And I came out of the retreat, called her to catch up and sync up. And I said, I had the most wild dream. I told her the dream, and she said, how is this possible? That's exactly what I did. I took a spontaneous road trip to LA. I met up with our friend James. His laptop was stolen out of his car, like all of these unbelievable details. So I don't know what that was, Mark, but it was a gift of some kind from the meditation experience, from surrendering, from doing something so hard, from confronting myself, being in my own skin and integrating. And really, I kind of experienced what they also call one mind, like this interconnectedness that is ever present and so beautiful and available and accessible if we choose to be still and connect.
I knew there was something there. That's cool.
Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
That's cool. All right, let's go back. Let's go back left brain, because a lot of people are left brain on this. They're like, what's this woo-woo stuff, Mark?
I know.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of things that we don't understand, and that if we're just open to it, it can open up things. We all know that there's, you know, people that we think about and all of a sudden they call us or text us. I just had happen this morning. You can't explain some of these things. So, and you know, Ray Dalio, who is one of the greatest hedge funds of all time, managers, and he ran something called Bridgewater Capital. He believes in a daily meditative practice. So look, you could say what you want, but if you're listening to this and you want to get ahead, I think that meditation has a role to play. And certainly, you know, you've experienced kind of an extreme part of that. And there's some cool stories and things that you can't explain that came from it. All right. So let's do this. Let's give us five things that we need to do. 3 to 5 things. I'll let you off the hook if you want. 3 to 5 things that we who are listening, watching this podcast should do, no matter where we are in our lives, to move ahead financially, because we all have some kind of funk in our financial lives that's been programmed or lack of education or educated into us that we should change. What are 3 to 5 things that we can do right now to proactively do that?
Number one, track your daily spending for some period of time. I would say minimum 90 days to do a kind of hyper focus, where you're literally studying and analyzing every place where your money is going to. Yeah. It's an opportunity to catch wasted money and subscriptions you don't use and questions you have. It's less about finding errant charges or things like that, though that can happen as well. It's just a cleanup. And a year is even better, a real sample of 1 year of your life. And you can do that any number of ways. You can do it yourself with the help of a software program like Monarch Money or Quicken, really easier for personal finance tracking. You can also hire a bookkeeper to do that for your household finances. It's all the credit cards, it's checking accounts, whether you're in a relationship or not, merged money or not, you need to get the comprehensive picture so that you can understand the whole pie and make a decision. Yeah, this is our lifestyle, my lifestyle. I feel good about it. It's aligned with my values and goals in the near term. So I'm going to go forth and prosper. That's great. But more likely, you'll find some things that you want to change, edit, or clean up. And I think that is the number one most powerful thing people can do. Second, I would say keep credit card spending in control. In other words, anyone that can afford the lifestyle that they're living should never be paying interest charges, finance charges on a credit card. And so I've worked with a lot of dual earners, double tech families and things like that. And I say that because I'm here in Silicon Valley, but also very high earners, two of them together, and they can't quite keep up with the credit card bills, in addition to property taxes, in addition to tuition payments or kids camps and things like that. And so if there is imbalance, that's a real call for attention. And imbalance looks like stress, conflict with family members, inability to pay credit cards down to zero on time in full every month, et cetera. And so and or any resentment or fighting around money, negative feelings whatsoever. It should be clean and clear, and again, providing those feelings of happiness and confidence. And life is going to continue throwing curveballs, right? Like the refrigerator is going to break, the trip is going to be canceled. People never kind of fully catch up, but you want to have a system in place where balances and checks and communication are happening on a consistent basis. And if you need to build out your financial support team with a financial advisor or coach or therapist, CPA, any of these people, a state attorney, do that. It's so worth it to have a solid financial support team. So that's number two. And then let's see. Lastly, I would say that self-care is really at the core of financial wellness. And so whether it's yoga or meditation, it could be a daily walk with your dog, any form, it could be regular massages if that's what you enjoy. Any form of self-care will help to kind of keep the flow going, keep your spiritual fitness intact, your mental health stable. So that's got to be at the foundation in order to have a happy and joyous relationship with money. If you're in an in suffering from addiction or unhappy at work or any of these other things that many adults struggle with, that's going to play out in your financial life. So that's a sample of the alignment process I recommend.
I love it. I love it. All right. So just to recap, track daily spending. Very important. Number two, keep your credit card spending under control. And number three, have a ritual of self-care. I love that. All right. Great. Listen, you've got a lot of nuggets that you've been dropping. How can people find out a bit more about you? Maybe get a copy of your book. Tell us what your book is called. And
Yes.
tell us how people can maybe do business with you.
Okay, thank you so much, Mark. So my website is SF, as in San Francisco, sfmoneycoach.com. And my email address, direct email is Carrie, Carrie, at sfmoneycoach.com. My book is right here. I'm
Oh,
so
there you go.
excited about it and proud of it. It's called At Peace with Money, A Holistic Roadmap to Financial Wellness. And it's available now on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. Also, the real publication date is January 20th, 2026. So keep an eye out, but you can pre-order it now and it will arrive as soon as possible. I'm super excited and proud of this project. So I hope lots of other people enjoy it too.
Good for you. It sounds great. And it really aligns with who you are from what I'm picking up and your message and your practice and your experience. And I just love it. So thank you so much for being a part of the Wealth Architect podcast today. I really enjoyed your time, your wisdom today. And those of you who are listening and watching, remember what I always say, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. So I'll see you next time. Have a great day, everybody. And thanks for being a part of the Wealth Architect podcast. And thanks again, Carrie.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yagi. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.